I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month. Hello and welcome to another very special Material Girls. Oh my God, Marcel. Material Girls bonus episode, aka Material Concerns.
This is what it's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, this is what it's going to be. I'm Hannah McGregor.
I'm Marcel Cosman.
And I'm Rami Marks.
Yeah.
Special guest.
So this is a very special episode, or I guess two-part episode. You're going to hear the first half, and then if you're a Patreon supporter, you're going to hear the second half, and that's where we're going to tell you about Robbie. So if you if you haven't subscribed to our Patreon,
this is a good time.
Now's the time to do it, because you want to hear about Robbie.
You want to know about Robbie.
Really do.
And we have a very special guest with us here today. You might know them as the co-host of Gender Playground, Rami Marks, who has joined us here in Anaheim, California.
Ooh, to go to Disneyland with you.
That's right, for research.
Yes, that's right. It was very important research.
We're here for research.
Yes.
We are here. And if
it's basically a conference.
If our universities ask, we're here for research. But listen, we're making the scholarly podcast right now. So look at this. Mm-hmm. Research. Mm-hmm. It's happening.
Very professional. Mm-hmm.
Totally. If you're listening to the audio, which you probably are because this is a podcast and that's kind of how that works, then you might notice that it sounds a little different from usual. That's because we are recording with a laptop propped on an ironing board, a single microphone propped on top of a
suitcase.
Marcel is lying on a hotel bed, and we are all talking around a single mic. So,
and all of us have some crispy sounding voices.
That's right.
From much roller coaster screaming the research.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of screaming for research. Yeah. And as a result, our lung capacity is compromised. We all sound a little bit sexier than usual.
Didn't know it was possible.
Didn't know.
And yet here we are constantly upping the ante on sexiness. So we're going to be doing a full-length traditional Material Girls episode about Disney and Disneyland. But because we knew we were all going to be in the same place together, we thought, what an opportunity to record a
cheeky little bonus. And so we put out the call for questions, and we've got a bunch of questions about Disney from y'all. And so we're going to answer some of those. Why don't I start?
I haven't seen these questions. I just need everyone to know. I had the opportunity and I didn't take
it. Yeah.
So these are all coming.
I did take the opportunity to look. Did not think about any answers.
So there is there are a number of questions here that are just like, have you been to Disney before? Did you bring any kids with you this time? So maybe let's start off by just setting out some context.
Great.
I think Marcel's answer has been going to be the longest. So Rami, you want to start? Have you been to Disney before?
Oh, yeah. I have been to Disneyland, which is the Disney park we are at. Once in my life when I was 7, I remember basically none of it except the Indiana Jones show that they used to have where he gets chased by a boulder. That's it. That's all I got.
And this is my favorite time. It's my favorite time, but it's also my first time. It's my first and favorite time.
This is my
first time at a Disney anything, and only my second time at a theme park. Mm-hmm. The last time being when we went to
Universal Studios
to go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. Many years ago now.
I don't think you can go to theme parks without me.
I can't go to theme parks without Rami. It's actually a condition of my release.
Off to a good start.
Oh boy. So I have photographic evidence that I went to Disneyland as an itty bitty teeny tiny toddler. But this is already off to such a good start. But the first time that I went as a conscious human to Disneyland was last year. Elliot and I went. So this is my second real time to Disneyland. We did bring my child, so that's good.
I think she brought us.
She's been our tour guide.
She did kind of bring us. But you've also been to Disney World a few times.
Been to Disney World twice. Yes.
I have also been to Disney World a handful of times.
Yeah.
Okay. As a conscious being.
As a conscious being. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we've got two basically Disney veterans here, and then me. And then I'm also here. So it's three adults and one 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. And that 8-year-old is lapping us.
Oh, God.
So much energy.
Quite literally.
She's got so much energy. It's
more than possibly all three of us combined.
Oh, definitely. Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure.
Like a lot.
For definitely. Sure. Yes. Undeniably. Here's a question. How do you pick what things to do? My FOMO would kill me.
Yeah.
Can I start with a brief answer to that? I didn't. Because, my FOMO would kill me if I actually thought about it and like looked into all of the options and knew what there was.
Mm-hmm.
And my executive dysfunction decision-making anxiety would also kill me. So instead I did literally no preparation and let Marcel literally be our fantastic
travel agent.
Could not think of that word phrase. I let Marcel do it. That's how.
Same. this is a very special trip for Marcel's 40th birthday.
Woo!
And when she reached out and was like, for my 40th, I want to go to Disney. Are you interested in coming? Mm-hmm. I was like, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't specifically say that that was conditional upon her doing 100% of the planning labor. But it turns out it was. So Marcel, why don't you tell us how you decide what to do at Disney and how you by extension decided what we would do at Disney
and how you deal with FOMO?
So because this is my second time, I definitely felt like I had a much better grasp of the quantity of things that was available to us. I am a planner. I'm a planner and I'm a researcher. And so I actually take a lot of pleasure in researching the various things, in drawing out like lists of things and mapping out what we can do and where. And so I have attempted to marry that planning and organizational research side with the like, but let's also be able to make decisions on the fly. Mm-hmm. Like, let's also be able to like, so some people will have like everything scheduled from,
can you just close that door?
Is it Ellie?
Yeah, she's practicing Chinese.
She's practicing their Chinese. What an angel. So some people will have everything scheduled from like top to tail, and I don't want to do that because I want there to be room for flexibility. And a lot of that has to, so a lot of that comes down to me not having huge stakes in the things that we do. And so like, here are a variety of options. How shall we move forward? And then the other secret answer is spending more money.
Say more about that.
So there are two parks at Disneyland. It is theoretically possible to do both parks in 2 days. And I don't know how people do that. I think you have to have more energy to do that. I think you have to be the kind of person who shows up when it first opens and stays to the very end. And I can't do that.
We did close to that for two days.
I also think realistically, if what you can afford is 2 days at the parks, you do as much of the parks as you can, and you deal with the FOMO. And you know, if you can afford to stay for a week, which is what we are doing,
and if you can afford to pay for thing that's not Fast Pass anymore,
the Genie Plus, which lets you like book a spot in a line at certain times via your app, and wait in line less time, like all of those things. Like I think the way that we are approaching this means that there will be minimal FOMO because we will have time and capacity to do everything we want to do. But that is, as is the case with many things at Disney, almost all your problems are solved by spending more money.
That is, yeah, totally.
Almost all of them.
Yep, basically. Almost, though.
Yeah.
But also, wait, there is, I think, one other secret answer. Come with an 8-year-old who does have like much greater stakes in this.
That's right.
Right. Because no matter what we did, even if somehow there was something that I had wanted to do and didn't get to, watching Elliot have the most fun and like get to do all the things that she wants to do, that was so enjoyable.
Yeah.
That I think that also like makes a big difference in a way where so much of my travel as an adult now is just adults.
Yeah.
And we all have maybe equal stakes, or at least think we do.
Yeah. When I was like in my 20s and first traveling with friends, we had a policy, which was whoever cares wins.
Yeah, it's a great one.
It's a really good policy. It gets tricky when you're traveling with adults because often nobody cares. And then it's a battle to make somebody be, as my friends and Aaron and I call it, daddy. So like, who's going to be grocery daddy today?
Russell's making the face.
And I'm
making, I'm making a thinking face.
But in this case, you know, Elliot wins 98% of the time because she always cares the most. I do think that there ends up being, because there is an inevitable feeling of FOMO when you're at these parks.
Yes.
Because there's so many things you could be doing at any given moment that I think for a kiddo, I think Marcel's having to do a fair amount of emotional management for Elliot's FOMO.
That
Raimi and I have not had to do.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
Having been to Disney... Having been to a Disney theme park with a 2.5-year-old, a 3.5-year-old, a 7.5-year-old, and now an 8.5-year-old.
That was all the same child.
All the same child, just to be clear. All the same. I will say that the 8.5-year-old is a lot better able to manage expectations and make choices. Two and a half was great because there's only so many things they can do. And they're also just like overstimulated by everything. So everything is amazing. 3.5 was the worst because they want to do everything again immediately after they do it the first time. And that's literally impossible. So I think we are, I think we're practiced. And I think that she's become a real pro at accepting disappointment and moving on to the next amazing thing.
Oh, what a lovely sentiment. Just accept the disappointment and move on to the next lovely thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm bad at that.
All right. We're going to pivot into some critical engagement with Disney.
What?
Because
you didn't tell me we were going to critically engage. I thought we were just here to talk about how much fun we were having. I thought the research was about Wyatt rules.
Okay. Well, let's ease into it with this question. How to move past / balance I hate capitalism to fully enjoy experiences like this.
That's a hard one.
I have part of an answer, and it actually might end up being an answer for a lot of these questions. Disney is designed to help you with that.
Oh my God.
It is.
It sure is.
It is just so built to erase all erase any traces of it, and also any feelings that you might have about it. So like we were talking about, like in the moment, if you're thinking, well, I could spend this extra $30 to not have to wait in such ridiculous lines and get to have more fun, my first instinct is like, I'm salty about this and I don't want to spend that money and screw you. But my second response is like, okay, but I just want to like have fun. And so I'm just going to do it. And then you immediately forget because then you're having fun.
That's right.
And so I think some of it is too easy to balance once you are actively there. And some of it, I think maybe similar to the like accept disappointment and move on to the next nice thing is like, we made a choice to engage with this, knowing that it means engaging in some problematic systems and just sort of letting that be what it is and letting ourselves enjoy it. And also knowing what our limits are of like, you know, we decided to spend more money, but also there were ways we could have spent even way more money.
That's so
to
true.
Have even more experiences. And aside from the fact that like, you know, we want to be able to survive and not spend all of our
make our mortgage payments,
sure, whatever. but also just knowing that there's a point at which it does become, at least for me, much more noticeable. And then I'm like, wait a second, you're scamming me. Capitalism is scamming me into having fun. And I don't want to do that anymore.
Is there a moment that you recall over the past 3 days that where you like felt that?
I don't think so, because I don't think that we collectively went there.
Yeah.
But if at some point we decided to like instead stay at a Disney resort and get all of the extras, like, you know, no judgment to someone who does find that important.
Yeah.
That does not feel remotely important enough to me to feel comfortable buying in that far.
Like when we were deciding where to stay, for example, we made the decision based on proximity. So like, how far can we walk and still be comfortable?
This was a text Marcel sent me. So it was, how far a walk from the park is still a pleasant morning, and how far is too far and now an annoying way to start your day?
You
crushed it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. This episode is brought to you by the Alpine Inn in Anaheim, California.
Honestly, the service, impeccable.
Impeccable.
They're so friendly.
Yeah, they're
truly
so friendly.
Truly tremendous.
Outrageous. So on our first day, which was a California Adventure day, we all wore these incredible matching t-shirts that Marcel made for us.
And bedazzled for us.
That were based on, Marcel and I months ago started sending each other back and forth the like worst Disney like homemade shirts that we could find. And the one that we really were like, oh, what a nightmare, were these shirts that said, my favorite Disney villain is my wife. And we were like, hilarious. Just love this misogyny. Anyway, Marcel ended up designing these incredible shirts that say, my favorite Disney villain is Adorno. And then there's a little picture of Adorno on them wearing looking so grumpy, mm-hmm. wearing Mickey ears, which Marcel bedazzled. And for those of you who maybe haven't yet listened to an episode where we have discussed Adorno, he was a mid-century German philosopher who came over to the U.S. as part of the Frankfurt School to escape the Nazis, as many other Marxist intellectuals did in that period, and ended up really informing sort of Marxist thought in North America. And Adorno argued that Disney was particularly dangerous because of the soporific effect on the working classes, which is it makes capitalism feel fun and thus distracts you, sort of lulls you into this state of complacence, mm-hmm. rather than empowering you to remember the ways in which capitalism is a death machine and mm-hmm. and we need to rise up against it. And I found it personally very useful, actually. Mm. Like, you know, the shirts are a fun joke. Mm-hmm. And also I found it very useful for my first day in the parks to have that reminder on me so that as I was engaging with these things that kept sort of making me like, oh, it's very weird. It's very weird to be here. All of this is very weird. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the reminder, Adorno, that like my moments of discomfort are totally appropriate, mm-hmm. And worth remembering. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the thing about a critic like Adorno that we have talked about in the past is that there's often a sort of failure to actually engage with the reality of how people experience culture and how people move through culture. Mm-hmm. And the actual human interactions with the cast members, with the other guests, with the like friends that we are with, mm-hmm. Have been like the primary shaping experience for good and for bad. Mm-hmm. And again, we're going to talk about Robbie in the second half. Yeah. So hold out for the Robbie story.
Robbie's the good.
Mm-hmm. But we received Robbie as a result of the bad.
Yeah.
But like, it's that. That is the complexity that remains interesting to me, is mm-hmm. like, yeah, absolutely. Capitalism is a death machine. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what leisure will look like after it has mm-hmm. fallen.
Yeah.
And I also am always inclined towards engaging more fully mm-hmm. with the things that I find troubling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I don't think I have anything useful to add. Yeah, I feel very complicated about it, obviously, but I didn't expect, I mean, I guess this is a story that I've told a number of times, but the first time that I went to Disney World, I was really kind of, I was a little bit embarrassed about the mm. fact that we were going to go. I didn't really want to tell people. I was sort of like, I've got a 2.5-year-old. We're going to be in Florida anyway. We're just going to try it out. I don't know. It was recommended. I heard it was a good time.
It was recommended.
It came highly recommended.
Can't even remember who.
It was my mom's idea. And it was the first, like, keeping in mind that I had been experiencing, like, really, really deep and profound undiagnosed depression for years when we went. It was the first time that I felt a kind of pure joy mm-hmm. and happiness that, it opened up pathways to my brain that mm-hmm. I didn't know were closed. Mm-hmm. And that was, like... Oh no,
oh no, am I only capable of experiencing joy at Disney?
Yeah, it was really like, it was a really intense, like emotional experience. And that's complicated. And I don't, at no point would I say that therefore Disney is good. Mm. It is more that like, I know that I feel such tremendous happiness
and joy when I'm in this place that is specifically designed and marketed mm-hmm. to make me feel joy. And when I can, I would like to.
Yeah.
Mm. It's not, it's complicated. It's not, at no point do I want to give Disney a pass for being a mega corporation that does this on purpose.
Right.
Yeah. It's just complicated.
I want to add one thought. The way that you just described Disney and that like pure joy sort of opening up those pathways in your brain mm-hmm. Sounds really similar to me to some of the ways that I've heard people describe like psychedelic assisted therapy, like using psychedelic drugs specifically as part of depression treatment or especially like PTSD treatment, that it can actually like help basically rewire pathways in your brain that have gotten stuck. And again, like similarly, you know, I don't think drugs are all good or all bad.
Right.
I think there are very clearly ways that drugs are doing incredible things and a lot of great experiences that people have with drugs.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, a number of concerns and risks and, you know.
And when under the sway of corporations that are inherently anti-human, they cause a lot more harm than they would otherwise.
Yeah.
But the premise of placing yourself within a surrealist mindscape for a number of days.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with this idea of Disney as like, because it is deeply surrealist.
Oh, yes.
Like it is, you know, I don't know if we have time to get into the simulacrum, but like the way in which it's generating this thing that is almost like reality, but definitely not reality, and is full of like incredible surrealist art and incredible surreal physical experiences that are about like playing with your senses and distorting your sense of reality.
Yes. Yeah.
Like that's all a remarkable experience.
Yes. And it's also like being on drugs.
It is like being on drugs.
Yeah. Being like literally being immersed in these worlds is the kind of point of their design.
Yeah.
There's actually, I'm not going to be able to quote exactly what it says, but there is a sign on, there's a big plaque when you first enter into Disneyland that says, as you enter here, you leave behind the regular world and enter into a world of like magic and possibility.
I took a video of it because I was fascinated. It says, here you leave today and enter the world of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy. And that is, it is fascinating. It's really interesting to think about escape in a more nuanced way than Adorno is, as a like what are the possibilities for escape that can be like transformative for our poor little brains. We have a lot more to say about the possibilities and limitations of escape. And in the second half of this episode, we're going to talk a little bit more about disability access at Disney. And we're going to talk a little bit more about being queer and being gender nonconforming at Disney. And I think we're going to talk a little bit more about our interactions with cast members, because that deeply ties into all of those questions. So if you want to hear a little more about that,
Give us your money
to support our future Disney trips,
to support our past, future, and fantasy.
That's right.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.